killer, honey. We had a good relationship going, but it's for the birds now, because here come the colonel.
Woo! Okay. Okay, settle down. Welcome back. The second half hour, The Promise of Tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, energy, everything. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our guest of today, Rich Anderson. He's with DTEC, and it's radar security. Fascinating stuff. When we broke in the last hour, he was getting ready to tell us about being able to shut down turbines when there's a detection of bird mortality at wind farm. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Today, we're going to replay the words of the late Stephen Schneider, who made a very profound comment on this program a little more than a year ago. Right now, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set to answer today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
All right, old spirit of the fountain, here's one for you. What country is home for the most cattle? What country has the most cattle, O Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Okay, well, when we think about it, it really shouldn't be such a surprise, should it? What country is home to the most cattle? The country of India is home to the most cattle. And now back to today's guest, Rich Anderson with DTEC, and dramatic advances in radar security.
Now, what is this about the being able to shut down turbines when birds or something are detected to cut down the risk of bird mortality in wind farms? Am I to understand that? Is that what you're talking about?
That's exactly the case. You know, as the nation starts to seek more and more alternative energy solutions, wind farms are a pretty nice alternative. You know, it's something that, you know, strategically placed, a wind farm with X number of turbines can produce, you know, a lot of electricity. Mm-hmm. For the region. And so the problem with that is twofold. One of them would be the bird mortality rates. Enough wind farms exist now to indicate that birds are very smart, but they sometimes get lost around the turbines, and they can be struck by the turbines and killed. So certain locations of the United States where there's a heavy migration path, whether it be down in the Gulf of Mexico, whether it be East Coast, West Coast, there can be quite a high mortality rate of some endangered species, et cetera, of plenty of birds out there that fall prey to the turbine. So what we've done is we've created a system, two of them we have deployed down in South Texas, down in the Gulf region, whereas our radar was originally designed for bird detection primarily, and now we've since enhanced that to do the human and the aircraft detection. But the bird detection is something that we do. We can monitor the migratory patterns of the birds in that region, and when it comes time for either the daily feedings or the annual migration, we can actually detect that they're coming in enough advance notice that we can shut down the turbines in which they're about to fly through, and reduce drastically the number of bird strikes to those turbines that would basically endanger the bird.
Now, I understand you do this with aircraft too. If New York, what was it? Which field there had your radar in place? Would Scully or whatever his name was not have to land that airliner in the Hudson River as he did a little while ago?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. The bird strike avoidance product that we provide basically can tell you not only the range, but also the height of the birds, and the type of risks to aircraft typically takes place at a certain altitude, and it's during takeoff and landing, because once they're up in the air, they can typically avoid on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's the takeoff and landing that's most critical to the bird strike
sure.
Requirement. So basically what we provide is a 360-degree surveillance of the airport, detecting the birds, detecting the migratory patterns of the birds, and we can basically provide a warning to the traffic controllers that, hey, there's a potential threat at this altitude, at this location. You know, adjust your takeoff and landing patterns accordingly. And we've got that deployed in the U.S. Air Force is a big user of the technology. NASA is a big user of the technology in conjunction with the space shuttle launches, which can obviously be critical if one of these large birds hits the space shuttle when it takes off. You know, it could mean disaster when the shuttle tries to attempt a reentry. So it's critical that these planes, the space shuttle, these fighter craft, do not hit the aircraft, do not hit the birds when they're in those takeoff and landing approaches.
Well, the space shuttle is such a massive object. One doesn't think that a bird, even a large bird, would cause a problem with that. But you say no, that when the space shuttle is going, if it hit some birds, that it could throw the mission off and destroy the mission.
Absolutely, they've determined that the risk of they have some very large birds over there called turkey vultures and things like that.
Yeah.
But, basically, if they hit certain key points of the of the craft, it can cause damage, and it can weaken the outer skin that's very important to keeping the shuttle safe as it transitions the atmosphere.
Yeah, the tiles, I guess that's true. And of course, eagles are back now, real strong too. So I guess you're right. The turkey vultures and the eagles and that sort of thing knock one of those protective tiles off could be pretty serious thing. Now, this radar detection that you're using for airplanes and things, that's on the ground. It's not on the plane itself. Is that right?
That's correct. We're ground based. Radar system.
Well, then, let's supposing the scenario that the airplane takes off from LaGuardia in New York, and your radar detects birds in flight. Then the ground gets in touch with the plane and says, "Hey, look out! Because 10,000 feet, up or whatever there happens to be, there's birds. I guess not 10,000 feet; it'd be more like 1,000 feet. But there's ample warning given since it isn't on board. Is that how it works?"
Yeah, what happens is, as the aircraft are in their approach or in their takeoff, they're in constant communications with the traffic controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And so what our system does, with our system, you can actually tell exactly where the risk is. But as far as the traffic controllers, they're very busy. They don't necessarily need to know what type of bird it is and exactly what location it is. They need to know the general vicinity. So. What our system does is it creates a basic alert based on, it's more like a quadrant alert, for this particular runway or that particular runway that says high risk, low, medium risk, or low risk. And so basically when part of that that's part of their everyday activities when they're coordinating with the planes as they're taking off and landing is what is that risk. And so if something were detected out at that particular location, at that runway, at the typical approach altitude,
mm-hmm.
then the high risk would give them, they would get a high risk warning and take the action they need, whether it be changing runways or changing altitudes or whatever the case may be.
Well,
I want to make it easy. They don't necessarily need to know what type of bird and where it is. They just need to know that there's risk at that potential location.
Well, that's some pretty fascinating stuff, Rich. Now, you're going to be at the Homeland Security Conference that IEEE is producing up in Boston in early November, and you're going to show your radar. What are you going to show there? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, what we're hoping to accomplish there is, We're this company is fairly new in the security industry itself. We've got several deployments where we're doing marine surveillance for ports, mm-hmm. and also doing air surveillance for some critical homeland security assets. But we're fairly new to the security industry, so our hopes of being there is to get some visibility with our technology. What we've done in the past in regard to birds and aircraft avoidance and so forth, and to just get the, you know, some visibility out there with some of these Homeland Security agencies about, you know, this is what we've done with birds and so forth. Now we've taken and applied these algorithms to ultralights, small craft, low flyers, small vessels on the water, and we can do a very, very good job of detecting and providing the early warning for these types of threats.
So we could envision then your systems being set up along our borders and our seaboards too, detecting a clandestine flight that could be bomb laden, even with with dirty bombs or even with smart bombs or something like that, that are coming in from off our shore or up from Mexico or even down from Canada, and this whole surveillance radar systems actually could be positioned all around the United States on our borders. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's exactly what I'm suggesting, and the thing is that radar doesn't sleep, radar doesn't blink. Radar is always on. You can get a full 360-degree surveillance. So basically, if you've got radar on station watching particular areas, then it's up to the radar to do the detection, determine whether it's a real detection or whether it's a false detection, and classify what type of, is it a small aircraft or is it a large commercial aircraft flying low, and then create the types of alerts and alarms and send them to the appropriate locations for enunciation and then response, and assessment.
Well,
exactly what I'm saying.
Well, let's presume that we're not going to deploy this at every point in our border and our seaboard right away, but it might be a thing to really go after. Where do you see the hot points right now? If you were to deploy, let's say, and I guess I should ask you too, how much, what sort of coverage? Do you have to have one of these units every 15 miles or every 100 miles? Or, how close together are they and where would you put them?
Well, now keep in mind there already exists kind of a large network of radar that cover the United States for commercial air traffic, mm-hmm. and military, and as well as even radar storm tracking and so forth. So there's already a pretty wide blanket of a pretty wide net covering the country for radar. So what I see our use is typically going to be, if you take the southern border, for instance, there's typically some specific paths where these drug smugglers or where these terrorists may know it's easiest for them to enter the country because they're blocked by a mountain or some rolling hills, or in even some cases they know that there's wind turbines there and they know that the big, large radar systems on the commercial airports aren't going to see within those turbines. So basically, we will strategically place. A lot of our systems are created and built on mobile platforms with all self-contained, with generators or solar power or whatever the case may be, where you can drive a trailer out to a known location and flip the switch, turn it on, and then start sending data back to a key point. So you could have a network of these trailers strategically placed along a specific threat area along the border. And now, what always happens when it comes to people crossing the border, once people start to get detected in a certain place, guess what they do? They go to a different place. So that's the advantage of having a mobile platform like ours, is you've caught a few bad guys over a month or 2 month period. They start to move to a different place, guess what we do? We can pack up our trailers, drive them over to the other place, and start catching some more.
All right. Well, let me get this. First of all, I'm to be sure I'm interpreting this properly, you say that we've already got a radar blanket around the country. So I got the impression what you were saying is that your methods and logarithms could be used with existing units, and then you also have other units that you can put on trailers, which would be an additional to whatever blanket we happen to have in radar around the country, and you can power it with solar, did you say?
Yes, that's correct. That we can make it a fixed application, or we can make it a mobile application, and pretty much put it wherever we want to, depending on the needs, depending on the threat for that particular region.
Okay, and you've proved it out with solar. Solar works really good. Of course, solar doesn't work at nighttime. So at nighttime, I presume what you would do is use batteries, or would you use gas generators, or how would you get your power supply after dark?
Well, we could do it any of those ways. You know, our primary power source at the moment for the typical trailer is a diesel generator, and you know, of course, you can always run, you know, on a battery or have a solar power you know, backup or even a primary solar power power unit to cover the system.
Sure. How wide an area? I mean, you got one of these things in a trailer, and you're going to move one down, let's say, to Presidio, Texas, or something like that. You know, how many would we have to have along, let's say, along the border with Mexico to give us a real good penetration along the border?
Well, you can cover standard aircraft. You can reach out. You know, we can detect out to about 34 miles. Mm-hmm. You know. And that's, we're talking, you know, the low flyers. And keep in mind, that's the problem with the traditional radar blanket that we have now, is the traditional radar blanket that we have is certainly will cover the areas, but not at a certain altitude and below. So, for us, we can cover, you know, out to 34 miles. We can cover aircraft. We can do ultralight detection, which, you know, as you might think, you know, there's an airplane versus an ultralight. An ultralight has a very small, what we call a radar cross-section. And so basically the bigger something is, the more hunk of a piece of a metal it is, the more energy it will reflect back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an ultralight doesn't have a big cross-section to reflect a lot of energy back. So with an ultralight system, we can, you know, cover out to, you know, about 15 miles, you know, and detect the ultralights. When you get down to smaller, some of the UAVs, which, as you know, the UAV market is growing by leaps and bounds. So, I mean, they're being used for everything you can possibly imagine. Some of these unmanned aerial systems, you know, we can detect out to, you know, probably about, you know, 8 miles or so.
Well, I would think, yeah, it should be easier to detect than an ultralight. An ultralight is made of... a parachute material and tubing and that sort of stuff, and there isn't really much there to deflect back, I think, isn't there?
Well, that's correct. You know, some of them do have engines on them, so they're built, you know, to be fairly sturdy. It's not like a hang glider per se. It's an ultralight aircraft that's a combustible engine power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it has a very small radar cross section. And it doesn't reflect a lot of energy back. So you have to really have the right type of radar frequency, you know, to penetrate the whatever weather that may be there, but the right type of algorithms to interpret that signal that has bounced back and determine that, yes, that indeed is an ultralight aircraft, and it's not an eagle that's just flying around in that location. So it's a pretty tight niche system to be able to accomplish these types of detection at these ranges.
Okay, and let's say an existing radar system that can't detect the low-flying stuff, as your stuff can. Can you use your equipment without putting in a new radar installation, or does your radar installation have to go into an additional installation to an existing radar system?
We can use ours as a standalone system. It's own radar. It can even have its own user interface. So, if there's a particular need at a border crossing, for instance, where there's a potential threat for drug smugglers or terrorist entry, Then we can provide a standalone system. We can drive the trailer out to the location, turn the radar on, and send the data back to, you know, a border crossing guard at a specific location, and then alert them when there's a potential threat. And it can be a completely standalone system, or we can tie that same data feed into a central monitoring point at some location and let the central point respond to that, as well as all of the other feeds that they're getting from all of the other locations.
All right, Richard, how long has DTECT been in business, and are there any other things that you do besides radar, or is radar the sole concentration?
Well, radar is our primary concentration on the product side. We do a lot of environmental surveys, and we support a lot of projects. We have many field biologists that we put out in the field to do, you know, biological surveys for wind farms and things like that. But on the product side, and our core business is the radar. And we've been in business. DTECT was founded in 2003.
All right, 2003. Sounds like you were founded in direct response to Homeland Security. Is that right?
Well, actually, we were actually founded traditionally. Our product offering was the bird strike avoidance. Avian migratory research was our initial product and project type surveys that we were doing.
That's good. Have you been with DTECT right from the beginning? Have you been with DTECT right from the very start?
No, I've been with the company now for only about 3 months. I come from a background of high-end security, DHS, and heavy industrial security solutions. Been in the security industry for about 15 years prior to joining DTECT.
Well, Richard, I want to thank you very much for being with us. This has been pretty terrific, and of course, I feel a lot safer knowing these systems are in place, and so wish you lots of luck in getting your radar systems deployed as widely as possible, and just very best regards for you, and we'll see you up in Boston in early November at the IEEE Homeland Security Show. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you there.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
When we start listening to pundits, you know, paper publishing famous climate scientist, Professor Limbaugh, you know, or somebody like that, and they're just out there spouting all this stuff, and they don't know what they're talking about. And there's this community that's, you know, that spends all of its time earning dramatically less money doing due diligence on the details of this, and then they're writing reports, but these reports are complicated and they're not expressed in clean English. You know, we scientists are really lousy at communication. And therefore the public is confused by this banter out there. But if they spent any time at all on the web reading credible websites like Department of Energy or things like that, they can find out that most of the arguments that are out in the political realm are nonsense. I'm sorry to say this, but if I tried to correlate the statements of Rush Limbaugh, George Will, with the statements of the IPCC, 95% of the time they get it wrong. I had to make some comments about Limbaugh because he says such god-awful stupid things that it's not skepticism, it's just denial. And skeptics are welcome. Deniers, they're just frustrating. Steven Schneider, and I work on the climate science impacts and policy issues as a professor at Stanford University.
Sadly now, the late Steven Schneider. Memorable comments made on this program August of 2009. So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You, I am waiting for you. I